This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. So you want to be a Jedi? An original retelling of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back by Adam Gidwitz. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Introduction. So, you want to be a Jedi. I get that. It seems cool. You can move things with your mind, control people with your thoughts. Oh, and the lightsabers. Yeah, those are awesome. But listen, it's not all mind control and weaponized flashlights. Being a Jedi requires patience and strength and self-awareness. And training. Lots of training. You still want to be a Jedi? Tell you what, I'm going to tell you a story. Not just a story, the story. The story of one of the greatest Jedi ever. As I tell it, I'm going to give you some tests to see if you've got what it takes. If you're afraid, I don't blame you. Most folks don't have what it takes. Most folks are just ordinary, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with ordinary. But if you're ordinary, you can't be a Jedi. Do you want to hear the story? And do you want to undergo the tests? Do you still want to be a Jedi? Okay. This is the story of a young man. His name was Luke Skywalker. Now, even though this story is about him, I'm not going to tell it that way. You want to become a Jedi. He became one of the greatest Jedi of all. If you want to follow in his footsteps, you need to walk in his shoes. I mean, really walk in his shoes, and wear his clothes, and carry his lightsaber, and share his friends, and fight his enemies. You need, for the duration of this story, to become Luke. If you do, you will have walked the long, difficult, dangerous path of a Jedi. That path begins a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. On the Ice Cube. Chapter 1. You gaze out over the field of white. It is winter on the planet Hoth. It is always winter on Hoth. I mean, they have a summer. That's when the temperature crawls up to about 10 degrees below freezing. It's lovely. It is not summer, though. It's winter, and the snow stands so deep, you could lose a small child in it. You're wearing a jacket of thick synthetic fiber, a vest on top of that, a hood, and goggles. That's the uniform of the rebels when they're out on patrol here on Hoth, riding their great Hothian tauntauns. Those are large lizards that walk on their back feet. You know that because you're Luke Skywalker, right? But I'm just reminding you. All your gear doesn't insulate you from the cold, though. It is bitter and insidious. It creeps through every crack in your shell and burrows down to your bones. Off in the distance, a meteor crashes into the snow. You squint at it. The wind whips and cracks over the ice.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Han, old buddy, do you read me?
Silence. Then a crackle of static.
Loud and clear, kid. What's up?
That's Han Solo's voice. You know Han Solo, of course, but I'll just remind you. He's a space pirate, a smuggler, a scoundrel, and somewhere between your big brother and your best friend.
I've finished my circle, you say. I don't pick up any life readings.
Han's voice breaks through again.
There isn't enough life on this ice cube to fill a refrigerator. The sensors are placed. I'm going back.
You shiver against the wicked wind.
Right. See you soon. There's a meteorite that just hit nearby. I'm going to check it out. It won't take long.
It won't take long. famous last words. For it is then, just as you sign off with Han Solo, that a Wampa hits you. It rears up out of nowhere. A giant gorilla, polar bear, abominable snowman-like creature. You see its tiny eyes and enormous grinning mouth for just an instant. Because then, its paw makes contact with your face, and your head snaps back, and the vertebrae in your neck crackle like noisemakers, and your ears are pealing like the bells in a church. And you are in the air, flying. Then you hit the snow. You lie there, freezing, maybe dying. Your tauntaun screams. You die. Almost. Lesson Alpha. A Jedi should know how to count. Okay, it's time for your first test. Close your eyes. Oh, wait, not yet. You've got to listen to the instructions first. In a moment, you're going to close your eyes. Then, you're going to count, slowly, to 10. As you're counting, try not to think about anything except the numbers. Okay? Do it now. Did it? Did other thoughts come into your head while you were counting? Probably. Thoughts like, what does this have to do with being a Jedi? And why is this guy so weird? That's okay. Don't stress it. But whenever you have a minute of quiet for the rest of today, try this again and see if you can think only of the numbers. Sometimes it helps to breathe in and out on each number. What does this have to do with being a Jedi? A lot. I'll explain later. And why am I so weird? There's no explanation for that. Chapter 2. Rebel troops, soldiers, engineers, space pilots hustle to and fro across the main hangar of the Rebel base on Hoth. Han Solo stalks past, ignoring them, brushing snow from his gear. They've been on the planet for weeks now, rebuilding their base. The Empire chased them from their last one, but they will persevere. They will continue to fight the vast and mighty Empire, and particularly the Emperor, who seems driven by the dark side itself. Some background. The Emperor was once Senator Palpatine of the Galactic Republic, the first government to bring lasting peace to the warring peoples of the galaxy. But Palpatine manipulated the system, gaining influence and power until he was able to steer the Republic away from democracy and toward dictatorship. His dictatorship. During his rise to power, he ordered the execution of every Jedi. That included the Padawans, children training to be Jedi as well. From there, the Empire, under Palpatine's direction, set out to subdue any planet in the galaxy that did not accept his rule. Subdue, in this case, meant enslave, decimate, or entirely destroy. So this rebel army on Hoth is the last armed resistance to the Emperor in the galaxy. Small as it is, there's nobody else. Han Solo peers across the hangar. Chewbacca, his longtime first mate, fiddles with the mechanics on their ship, the Millennium Falcon. Chewbacca is a Wookiee, which means that he's shaped like a man, but taller, and he's entirely covered with long brown hair. He looks approximately like a barbershop's floor that has stood up and is now fixing a spaceship. Two droids pass in front of Han. The first is short and squat like a fancy trash can. He is R2-D2, the bravest service droid that Han's ever met. The second looks like the Tin Man tricked out in gold. He is C-3PO, the most cowardly busybody protocol droid that Han has ever met. At least that's Han's opinion. Han is going to miss this place. The energy, the commitment to the cause, the dumb courage in the face of impossible odds. An Imperial battle station had recently destroyed an entire planet with one shot. Han saw the debris,
just bits of rock floating in the void. You can't fight power like that. But you can try. And this ragtag bunch of soldiers and droids, bless their foolish hearts and motherboards, are trying. But not Han. Not anymore. He's leaving tonight. No time for teary goodbyes. No mushy stuff. There is, though, one person that he wants to say goodbye to. He finds her in the command center. She's pushing buttons and barking orders into a comlink device. She looks angry. Han likes her like that. Her name is Leia, and she is the princess of that planet the Empire destroyed with a single shot. She was on the Imperial battle station, being forced to watch. Now she is among the leaders of the rebellion. You can understand why. Her brown eyes flash at the various panels and readouts. Her long brown hair is braided and wrapped in a ring around her head. At first, Han studiously ignores her. He goes over to General Riken, commander of the base, who is poring over the security readouts. Like security readouts are going to help when the Empire shows up.
General, Han says, I'm sorry, but I can't stay here anymore.
The general looks up at Han from his readouts, gray eyes peering from under gray eyebrows.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He says it like it's a question. Han suddenly feels a bit sheepish.
Well, there's a price on my head. If I don't pay off Jabba the Hutt, I'm a dead man.
Behind Han, the princess punches some numbers into the computer. Really hard.
You know, Jabba,
Han continues.
Big, fat, ugly, lives on Tatooine. He's no big shakes, but he knows how to shoot you in the back from halfway across the galaxy when he wants to.
The general nods sympathetically.
A death mark is not an easy thing to live with. You're a good fighter, Solo. I hate to lose you.
He goes back to reading his security reports. Han shrugs, thanks him, turns away. Toward Leia. She is punching buttons like they did something to her. He slides up beside her and whispers,
Well, Your Highness, I guess this is it.
Yeah, I guess so.
She mashes buttons some more. Poor buttons. Han watches her. She refuses to look at him. He rolls his eyes.
Well, don't get all mushy on me,
he snaps. No response. He stalks off. I am going to skip this next part, as it does indeed get kind of mushy. I will, in fact, skip all the mushy parts of the story to follow. They are neither appropriate nor relevant to a young Jedi in training. All you need to know now is that Leia runs after Han, and they have an argument in which it becomes very clear that Han and Leia kind of love each other and kind of hate each other. When they are just at the very peak of this argument, and both are red-faced and bothered, a high and grating voice interrupts them.
Excuse me, sir.
It is C-3PO, the Golden Tin Man.
Sir, oh, sir.
He sounds like a British butler with his underwear in a twist.
Buzz off,
Han replies. It's not clear whether he's talking to Leia or the golden droid.
But, sir, I meant to report to you that Master Luke hasn't returned yet.
Han stops. Leia looks at C-3PO and then accusingly at Han. He didn't come back with you? Han ignores her. C-3PO continues.
He may have come in the south entrance, sir, but...
What do you mean he may have come in? He may have? Find out!
Han turns to Leia and shrugs as if to say, What can you do with these droids? She rolls her eyes and stalks off. A few minutes later, Han Solo is staring out at the driving snow. The sky is a heavy gray.
The light is fading, sir, a rebel lieutenant reports. The temperature is dropping rapidly.
Han nods.
That's right, and my friend is out there.
Behind Han, Chewbacca is howling. Wookiees don't talk so much as make noises, somewhere between those of a dog and an opera singer. A series of beeps emanate from R2-D2.
Sir,
C-3PO says, translating,
R2 is reporting that the odds of Luke surviving out there are roughly 725-1.
Leia, standing behind them all, turns away. Han zips up his coat and fixes his fur-lined hood tightly over his head. Sir, says the rebel lieutenant, your Tauntaun won't make it past the first marker. Han fixes his goggles over his eyes and climbs up on the uneasy beast. He steadies the creature, rubbing its scaly neck and whispering into its ear hole. Finally, he turns back to the lieutenant and replies,
then I guess I'll see you all in hell.
Lesson Beta. Jedi have to breathe too. Second lesson. Ready? This time, you're going to do the same thing as before, but someone else is going to count for you. Get whoever is nearby. When you close your eyes, they should silently start to count to 10. When they get to 10, have them gently tap you on the shoulder. If you have a watch or a phone that will time you, feel free to use that. This time, when your eyes are closed, try not to have any thoughts. Just feel the air come in your nose and out of your nose. Be aware of every single breath. In and out. Go ahead. Meditate. Did you have any thoughts, my young Padawan? It's not easy to still your mind, is it? It took me many years before I could quiet my mind through meditation. But keep trying. It is the first step on the path of the Force. Chapter 3. You groan. Your head is pounding. Your eyes feel like they've been shut with staples. Slowly, you force them open. You blink, and blink again. A Wampa is feasting on your Tauntaun while sitting on the ceiling. Can Wampas sit on ceilings? Your temples throb. You black out again. Later you wake up. The Tauntaun is almost entirely eaten. The Wampa, its white fur caked with blood, is no longer sitting on the ceiling. It is sitting on the floor, and you are hanging upside down. Maybe you were hanging upside down all along. You peer up at your feet. They are trapped in ice on the ceiling. You yank at them. They do not budge. You try to lift your body up to them, but you are too heavy, too woozy. You stare at the blood-covered Wampa. What will it eat when it's finished eating the Tauntaun? Never mind. Stupid question. You look over the cave again, trying to ignore the Wampa gnawing on your Tauntaun's bones, which is not easy. You look past the beast. You don't see what you're looking for. You look behind you. Nope. Finally, you examine the area around you. There it is, half buried in snow. Your lightsaber. No blaster. That's probably somewhere out in the middle of the snowfield, petrifying until the end of this planet's ice age. But that's okay. You prefer the lightsaber anyway. It's not that far from you, so you reach for it, your arm straining in its socket, fingers grasping at the air, as if they could drag you closer. But they can't. You exhale and let your body go limp. The Wampa is now gnawing on the Tauntaun's enormous thigh bone, slurping and sucking at the supple sinews. You look back at the lightsaber. Then you think of old Ben, Obi-Wan Kenobi, the man who gave you the lightsaber, the man who turned your father into one of the greatest Jedi Knights of all time, the man who began to train you before he was killed by Darth Vader. Darth Vader, the Emperor's right hand. Darth Vader, who killed your father. You stop your mind from wandering. You focus on the lightsaber. You know what old Ben would tell you to do. Close your eyes. Count to 10.
letting the thoughts clear from your mind. Breathe in and out. In and out. Until your mind is as empty and bright as a snowfield on a clear morning. Until you can feel everything around you, as if everything in the room has a physical shape on the field of your mind. You feel the great hot wampa. You feel the smooth, sticky bones of the tauntaun. Then, closer, the mound of snow. The lightsaber. You touch it in your mind. You reach out your hand. You do not strain. You just reach. You hold the lightsaber in your mind. And then, from the snowbank, the lightsaber jumps to your hand. You open your eyes. There it is, actually in your hand. And there is the wampa, standing in front of you, staring at you, perplexed and furious. You ignite the lightsaber. Its blade is silvery blue. It hums, burning against the darkness. It is as serene and as powerful as the Force itself. And dangerous. Holding a lightsaber feels dangerous. At least, it does to you. Though right now, it's more dangerous to that blood-soaked wampa standing in front of you. You swing the lightsaber at the ice holding your feet. You hit the ground just as the wampa lunges at you. And its arm goes twirling across the cave. The wampa staggers back, staring. The lightsaber is so sharp, so hot, that it cauterized the wound. There is no blood, but there is no arm either. The great beast is in pain, and now it is afraid of you. Very afraid. Keeping your eyes trained on the savage ice beast, your lightsaber raised high, you slowly back out of the cave. Lesson Gamma. Reach out and touch something with your mind. You probably think that your next test will be trying to move something with your thoughts. Yeah, we're not going to try that. Yet. I mean, you can give it a go, but don't be discouraged if you fail. Moving stuff with your mind is a wee bit difficult. No, for this test, I want you to close your eyes. Not yet. And breathe. It might help you to count to 10 at first. Then, just focus on your breath. Once you've been focusing on your breath for a while, I want you to feel what's around you. Not with your hands, with your mind. Explore the objects of the room. Your eyes should still be closed. Don't try to remember what's around you. Just feel it. Start with what you're sitting on. Then anything that's in contact with your body. Work outward. What's touching those things? Feel their shapes in your mind. Finally, I want you to focus on something near you, but that you are not touching. Trace it with your mind. Feel its shape. Reach out. Touch it. Open your eyes. Were you right? Was it where you thought it was? Did it look like you thought it did? If not, don't worry. Just try it again. Remember, the most important thing is to feel everything around you. The guessing part at the end is just for fun. Chapter 4. The wind is at gale speed. Even if you knew which direction to go, you couldn't do it. The wind throws you this way and that, like you're a newspaper in a hurricane. Behind you, your trudge marks trace a crazy zigzag pattern in the mounting snow. Your legs are shaking with strain. Your lungs are burning. Your sweaty hair is literally frozen. You fall. You lie half buried in the snow. You try to rise. Ugh. You fail. Your eyes close. The snow feels warm compared to the whipping wind above. If you could just
sleep for a moment or two. Just a little sleep.
This is, of course, how you die in a snowstorm. Did you know that? Well, now you do. Never fall asleep in a snowstorm. See? Look at all the important things I'm teaching you. The minutes drift by like dreams. The cold seeps through your thick thermal clothes, creeps into your skin, and then crawls along your veins, slowly freezing them. It is coming like an undertaker for your heart.
Luke!
You hear it faintly. A voice. Someone you recognize.
Go away, you think. I'm sleeping.
Luke!
The voice is nearby. Maybe you should raise your head to see who's there.
But you're so tired. The cold is building a snow fortress around your heart, slowing it down.
Luke!
You decide just to go back to sleep. The cold is so gentle, and your heartbeat seems now so superfluous.
Luke!
The voice sounds like old Ben's. But that's not possible. Old Ben is dead. Unless you're dead too.
And then you realize that you are dying. Wake up! You shout at yourself, but your eyes won't open. You cannot raise your head.
You are going to die.
The voice is speaking.
Luke, go to the Dagobah system.
It sounds like Ben.
Find my old teacher, Master Yoda.
Ben! You cry, or try to. Ben!
Why isn't he helping you? Where is he?
You try to stay conscious, but you are failing, falling, failing, and the cold is laughing its quiet, sinister laugh.
Luke!
You thrust your eyes open, shattering the ice that has formed a crust over your eyelids. Han Solo is standing above you.
Luke! Don't give up on me, kid.
He is pulling you from the snow. You are hanging limply in his arms. You are trying to help him, but you literally cannot move. You've heard that Jedi can stay conscious after death, existing in the fabric of the Force. Maybe you're doing that right now. You certainly feel dead.
You suddenly become aware of a Tauntaun. Good. A Tauntaun is good. A Tauntaun can carry you somewhere. Maybe somewhere warm, where you will be buried, because you are dead.
Han,
you say,
put me on the Tauntaun.
But no sound is coming out of your mouth. And then Han's Tauntaun rears back, roars to the black, snow-speckled sky, and keels over.
Oh, great,
Han mutters. He reaches over and places his gloved fingers on the beast's broad neck. He curses. The Tauntaun's heart has stopped. Now it cannot carry you to the warm place so you can be buried.
You have never felt sadder in your life. You wonder if you are not a little bit loopy right now.
The scruffy space pirate looks back and forth between the lizard beast and you. Finally, he reaches over you and unhooks your lightsaber from your belt. He ignites it and looks at the Tauntaun.
Sorry, old buddy,
he murmurs. Then he slits the Tauntaun's belly with the glowing blade. Gooey, steaming innards slide out onto the snow.
Ugh,
he mutters.
And I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Han lifts you from the snow and slides you into the beast's stinking belly. It feels warm and soft, and smells worse than anything you have ever smelled. He is burying you. What a good friend Han is.
This isn't gonna be pretty, kid,
he murmurs.
But it'll keep you alive, until I can get the portable shelter up.
alive, you think. But I'm not. And then you black out. Thankfully.
The sun rises the next morning on two snowspeeders. Their pilots scan the blinding snow with shaded eyes.
Captain Solo?
They call into their transmitters.
Commander Skywalker, do you copy? Do you copy?
The planet is wide, bright, and empty before them. And then, it isn't. Their transmitters crackle to life.
Good morning.
They hear.
So nice of you to drop by.
It's Han Solo. The pilots smile.
Echo Base, this is Rogue 2. We found them. Repeat, we found them.
Lesson Delta. Do something disgusting. Sometimes we have to do things that are gross. You are at someone's home. They serve you a plate of fried kidneys. You eat it. You're talking to a friend. She picks her nose right in front of you. You keep talking to her as if nothing happened. You are standing beside a small cube of water. Hundreds of people have already been in this water today. Their dead skin cells are floating all over the surface. At least 14 people have also peed in this cube of water. You dive in. Wait, that last one is called going to the swimming pool. That's not gross at all. That's supposed to be fun. But why? Shouldn't that be at least as gross as eating kidneys? In fact, why is eating kidneys gross? You eat muscles all the time. That's called meat. And if you eat hot dogs, you eat parts of an animal that are way grosser than kidneys. All I'm trying to say is that gross is a matter of opinion. In some galaxies, eating kidneys is gross. In other galaxies, swimming pools are. As a Jedi, you can't be afraid to do something because the people around you think it's gross. You have to overcome your disgust, your fear, and everyone else's opinion. That stuff is all relative. In some places, this is gross. In others, that is. Be above all that. The Force is. Next time there's something that grosses you out, do it. Eat the kidneys. Swim in the pool. If it's not dangerous and won't make you sick, overcome your disgust and do it. Except picking your nose in public. Don't do that. That's gross in every galaxy.
Chapter
5. You're lying in bed. Down the side of your face runs a bright, angry scar. You know it's there because it makes your skin feel tight, sore. Your heart is beating slow and hard, like a jalopy that doesn't want to start. The doors to the medical bay open, and R2-D2 rolls in, followed by a bubbling C-3PO.
Oh, Master Luke! It's so good to see you fully functional again.
C-3PO's head totters back and forth when he speaks. Says the fancy trash can.
R2 expresses his relief as well.
You force yourself to sit up and ignore the shooting pain in your jaw and the roaring protest of that beating knot of muscle that keeps blood flowing through your body. You gaze at these two. They're like a comedy routine, the two of them. You remember buying them on Tatooine to help out around your uncle's moisture farm. You didn't expect R2 to have a hologram of Princess Leia crying out for help, nor for him to lead you to Obi-Wan. You've been through a lot with these droids. You think of them now as your friends. Speaking of friends, Han saunters in from the corridor and grins at you crookedly.
How you feeling, kid?
You shrug.
You look okay to me. I mean, as okay as you ever have.
Well, it's thanks to you.
That's two you owe me.
He's right. There was a space battle with an enormous Imperial space station, not to mention a few TIE fighters, that would not have turned out so well if not for Han. Leia's head appears in the doorway. You think of the first time you saw her.
shimmering and blue, and projected from R2's hologram lens, calling for help. Calling you, though she didn't know it. There's something about her. You can't place it, but she's really something. You're not sure what. Upon seeing Han Solo, she frowns. But then her eyes fall upon you. Her face lights up. She rushes to you and enfolds you in her arms. But Han breaks in.
Well, Princess, it looks like you managed to keep me around a little while longer.
Leia glances disgustedly back at him.
I had nothing to do with it, and you know it. The General thinks it's too dangerous for any ships to leave the system right now.
That's a good story. But I think you just can't bear to be away from a gorgeous guy like me.
You glance between them, bewildered. What's all this about?
Leia rolls her eyes. I don't know where you get your delusions, Laser Brain.
Laser Brain? You chuckle.
Han turns on you.
Ah, you think it's funny, kid? Well, you should have seen us alone in the South Passage. She expressed her true feelings for me.
Leia's face has turned three shades of red.
You stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
Han's eyes go wide.
Who are you calling scruffy-looking?
You have no idea what's going on. Why are your friends fighting over such stupid things?
Han has turned back to you. His words are spitting from him like bullets.
Well, looks like I've got her all riled up, kid. You know, love is like that.
Love, you think? You are completely lost.
Leia's eyes are suddenly dangerous.
Well, she says to Han, I guess you don't know everything about women.
And with that, she bends down and kisses you, full on the mouth. It's warm and makes you break out in a sweat and feels weird.
And then Leia storms from the room. Han stares after her, dumbfounded. So do you.
I know, young Padawan. I promised I'd skip these mushy parts.
But you'd want to know about getting kissed, wouldn't you? So you could wipe it off?
I promise, though, I'll skip any future situations like that. Probably.
Suddenly, a tinny alarm blares out of the speaker in the wall.
Foreign object breach, marker 2. Repeat, foreign object breach, marker 2.
Han shakes off the scene with Leia.
Be right back, kid. You stay here.
You nod and lean back, thinking about that kiss.
2 hours later, Han explodes into the medical bay.
News?
You ask, sitting up and then instantly regretting it as pain lances through your face.
It's an Imperial droid,
Han spits.
Suddenly you can't feel the pain anymore. Your heart has just shifted to light speed.
Did it spot us?
Han looks at the floor.
I may have blown it up.
You sit back and close your eyes.
We're evacuating the base,
Han continues.
The whole planet. We've got to go.
You sigh. It's been a good base, all things considered. But you nod. He's right. You've got to go.
Lesson Epsilon. Peace is a superpower. You've practiced meditating over the course of 10 seconds. Now, I want to teach you instantaneous meditation. This is how you do it. Close your eyes. Smile, gently. Don't force a smile. Just let the corners of your mouth rise. Breathe in through your nose, deeply, until the air is all the way in the bottom of your belly. Breathe out. Keep smiling. Open your eyes. Try that. The next time you're in a situation that makes you uncomfortable, or angry, or jealous, or so proud you think you might act like a total jerk, try this. Its effects may not last very long,
but you'll feel at peace for the next few minutes. And that might be just long enough to help you survive whatever it is you need to survive.
Chapter 6. An Imperial Star Destroyer is bigger than the biggest ship you've ever seen. It would take you a day to walk from one end of it to the other. A full day. That's like the size of a city. A big, bristling, flying city. With guns. Lots of guns. The Imperial Star Destroyer that this next part of our story concerns is the largest Star Destroyer there is. The flagship. It is the second most powerful weapon in the Empire. Yes, the second. The first most powerful weapon in the Empire is actually riding in the Star Destroyer. The first most powerful weapon in the Empire also wears a helmet and breathes through an electronic respirator. The first most powerful weapon in the Empire is called Darth Vader. You know who he is, right? Vader was once the most promising young Jedi in the galaxy. He was Obi-Wan's student, undergoing the training that you've just begun. But he turned to the dark side and killed his master. He is now a Dark Lord of the Sith, which means he can do most of the cool things Jedi can do. He just does them for evil purposes. Currently, his mission is to eradicate all resistance to the Empire. He is, at the moment, receiving some good news. He stands behind a group of Imperial officers. Admiral Ozzel, the upright, tradition-minded commander of the Imperial fleet. General Veers, commander of the battalion of Imperial troops tasked with eliminating the rebel army. And Captain Piet, the commander of the Star Destroyer that is currently carrying them through space.
"I think we've got something," Captain Piet is saying. "The report is only a fragment from a probe droid in the Hoth system, but it's the best lead we've had."
Admiral Ozzel shrugs off his captain. Piet is entirely too enthusiastic in Ozzel's opinion, as if every sentence he utters might prove sufficient for a promotion.
"We've had thousands of probe droids searching the galaxy, Captain.
The visuals indicate life readings, sir, and the Hoth system is supposed to be devoid of human forms."
Admiral Ozzel represses the urge to roll his eyes. These young, ambitious captains tire him so.
"If we followed up every little lead a probe sent back, we..."
And then, Vader's voice, as deep and rich and dark as the densest black hole, cuts through the noise.
"Let me see,"
Darth Vader intones. He sweeps past the Admiral. He wears a long black cape, and every centimeter of his skin is hidden beneath shining black metal. Vader moves toward a screen, displaying a fuzzy image of buildings and what might be a snowspeeder cruising across the ice.
"It is they,"
he intones.
"The rebels are there."
"Lord Vader,"
objects Admiral Ozzel, distinctly displeased at being contradicted.
"It could be anything. Smugglers, a small settlement."
"It is the rebel base. I can sense it. And Skywalker is with them."
"Lord Vader."
Admiral Ozzel does not put much stock in Vader's sense, nor in the hocus-pocus of the Force and the dark side. Admiral Ozzel is a sensible man, a man of science and warfare.
"Set your course for Hoth, Admiral."
In addition to not believing in all that hocus-pocus, though, Admiral Ozzel is terrified of Darth Vader, as is everyone. And so the great ships of war begin to move toward Hoth. Lesson Zeta. You must find balance. This time, I want you to meditate while standing on one foot. Seems difficult, right? Well, it should. Being a Jedi isn't easy. If you happen to be somewhere where you can't stand on one foot, you should balance a book on your head. If you are standing on one foot, you should keep your eyes open
and focus on a spot on the wall or the floor. Don't look at it, just keep your eyes focused on it. If you're balancing the book on your head, close your eyes. Now, count slowly to 10, focusing on nothing but the numbers. I know that you look stupid doing this. You know you look stupid too. But Jedi often have to do things that make them look stupid. Some people won't understand. Most people, in fact, won't understand. But if you want everyone to think you look cool all the time, you can't be a Jedi. Jedi follow a higher calling than cool. The Battle for Hoth. Chapter 7. The opposite of a Jedi Master is a Sith Lord. Well, opposite isn't quite accurate. Perhaps we should say a Sith Lord is the inverse of a Jedi Master, or the photographic negative, where everything that is light becomes dark. Where Jedi Masters meditate to quiet their minds and connect with the Force, that wave of energy that unifies all living things, Sith Lords meditate to concentrate their anger, their fear, and their hatred into a pure point of ruthless power within them. This is what Darth Vader is doing, sitting in his meditation cell aboard the Empire's flagship when General Veers enters the room. The silence is heavy. It is punctuated only by the regular breathing of the Sith Lord through his ventilator. General Veers looks young for his position, but he has seen fire in a dozen battles. He has earned his rank through cunning and courage. He fought the Zalorians on Zaloris, the Kulrunians on Kulrun III, and the Yavinians while flying through space. Backward. Never was Veers afraid. But now, merely standing in the private chamber of Darth Vader, Veers is afraid. He remains silent. A droplet of sweat runs along a crease in his forehead. Finally, Vader murmurs,
"What is it, General?"
Even a murmur from Vader can wrong-foot a battle-hardened commander. Veers stammers before speaking.
"My lord, the fleet has moved out of light speed. We have detected an energy field protecting an area around the sixth planet of the Hoth system. It is strong enough to withstand even our cannons."
Vader rises. His dark, looming figure looms even larger and more darkly when he is angry.
"That fool of an admiral came out of light speed too close to the system."
"He felt surprise was wiser, Lord Vader."
"He is as clumsy as he is stupid."
Secretly, Veers agrees, but he will not reveal his opinion. He is a military man, and he knows his place. Vader studies the clean-faced general.
"Prepare for a surface attack."
The general bows and scurries from the chamber. Vader turns to a large screen and calls up an image of Admiral Ozzel conferring with Captain Piette on the ship's bridge.
"Lord Vader!"
The admiral hails him, as smug as any commander on the verge of a decisive victory.
"We are in position to..."
The admiral is suddenly not speaking. Rather, his mouth is moving, but no words are coming out. He searches mutely for sound, then for breath. He finds neither. His hands crawl to his neck. His eyes bulge.
"You have failed me for the last time, Admiral. Captain Piette, are you there?"
A frightened captain steps around the admiral, who is now grasping at his throat frantically and turning a pale shade of blue.
"Yes, Lord Vader."
"Make ready our ships for a ground assault. You are in command now, Admiral Piette."
With those words, the former admiral collapses to the floor. He is dead. Lesson Ada. Silence speaks louder than words. Sometimes. I want you to try to communicate without using your voice. First, try communicating with only gestures. You do this all the time. You say, "Hello," with a hand gesture. You say, "I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be right back."
with a gesture of your hands and your face combined. You say, "If you don't let me go to the bathroom right now, I'm going to pee all over your floor," with your hands, face, hips, and knees.
Go ahead. Try that one.
Okay, now think of something you can communicate with only your eyes. You can say, "Do you agree with me?" Or, "That guy is freaking me out." Or, "I think I just peed all over your floor." Try those. Finally, close your eyes, put your hands in your lap, and concentrate. Try communicating with somebody nearby using only the Force. See if you can make yourself heard without moving a muscle. But don't send a message about peeing on the floor. This is a waste of your Jedi powers. If you peed on the floor, everyone will know it already. Once the person hears you, see if you can make her actually understand you. This isn't easy. Being a Jedi isn't easy.
Chapter 8. You're weaving through a chaos of men, women, and droids. They scramble across the Rebel base, gathering up sensitive materials, readying ground weapons, and preparing transports for the evacuation. The base is as frantic as a beehive that's been kicked. Footsteps echo on the hard floor. Engines fire and die and fire again. You can smell the gaseous fumes of the generators working on overdrive to keep the shields up. The odor reminds you of your uncle's workshop on Tatooine. To your left, Han is eyeing the lifters of his faithful ship, the Millennium Falcon, with guarded optimism.
Okay, Chewie, try it now.
Up in the spacecraft's cockpit, the Wookiee flips a switch. A spark flies from the lifters, like a blaster being fired by a drunk. Han ducks and covers his head. He straightens up, stares at his faithful ship, balefully, and curses. You walk up beside him.
"Looks great," you say.
"Stow it, kid."
After another moment of baleful glaring, he turns away from the Falcon.
"Well," you nod, "take care of yourself."
"You okay to do this?"
Han asks. The effects of the cold and of being kidnapped by a Wampa have pretty much worn off. Your heart beats like a military march now, and your senses feel quick and keen. Battle is coming, and you are ready. You tell Han all of this with just a flash of your eyes.
"Be careful out there," he says.
"You too."
You exchange one more glance with Han. He grins at you and nods. And in that moment, you realize that sometimes you don't have to be a Jedi to communicate without words. Sometimes, all it takes is being friends.
In a distant wing of the Rebel base, Leia is briefing a group of fighter pilots. They wear bright orange jumpsuits, like they're inmates in the coldest prison on Earth. Also the coolest, because in this prison, you get to fly spaceships.
"All troop carriers will assemble at the north entrance," Leia is explaining.
It's not clear who put her in charge of the X-Wing briefing, but Leia's the sort of gal who doesn't need anyone's permission to take charge.
"The transport ships will leave as soon as they're loaded. Only 2 fighters per escort."
A young pilot laughs.
"2 fighters against a Star Destroyer? We're toast. Burnt toast."
Leia has a way of looking at someone that makes them feel very small and very stupid.
"Thanks for your input, Hobby. Your tactical opinions are always invaluable."
The other pilots laugh. Leia goes on.
"You have cover from the ion cannons on the ground. They'll clear your path."
Hobby looks at his comrades. They're nodding.
"Once you pass the destroyers, get to the rendezvous point. Understood?"
"Understood,"
the pilots bark. Except for Hobby, who mutters, "This is suicide." Leia does not hear, which is lucky for Hobby. The princess dismisses the pilots and makes her way to the command center, past the hustling soldiers and engineers, the beeping droids and whirring machines.
The general's old gray eyes are scanning readings on a screen. He knows she's there without turning around. You might say that Leia has presence. General Riken says,
"The Empire has moved a destroyer directly into the path of the transports."
Leia nods. "So be it. We should let the first transport go." The general hesitates, his eyes fixed on the Star Destroyer on the monitor. It is just one of many surrounding the planet. Beyond this cordon of ships waits one more destroyer, the largest he has ever seen, in fact. The flagship of the Empire. Riken says,
"We have shoulder cannons and rocket launchers set up around the perimeter."
He's almost pleading.
"And Skywalker is readying a squadron of snowspeeders."
Leia's voice is a gentle rebuke. "General, you know we can't hold off the Imperial forces if they invade by ground. No matter how brave Luke is, no matter how brave any of us are. If we stay and fight, we'll be killed. We've got to launch the transports." The general sighs and nods. His gray eyes look sad. Another base lost. Another position abandoned before the overwhelming might of the Empire.
"Prepare to open the shield."
Leia turns to the shield operator. The evacuation coordinator is waiting beside him. They both wait for Leia's command. The princess merely says,
"Go."
For just an instant, there is no defensive shield around the rebel base on Hoth. Three crafts, a transport and two fighters, catapult into space. A Star Destroyer stands directly in their path. The scene is approximately like three mice running at a tiger. The odds aren't good. The destroyer lowers its shields and readies its tractor beam to bring them in. The tiger is licking its lips. The transport and two fighters approach the destroyer. In the rebel command center, General Riken wipes his gray brow and then dries the back of his hand on his sleeve. A droplet of sweat falls to the floor. In a moment, it is frozen. The tractor beam locks on the transport. The tiger's claws are out. "Fire!" Leia bellows. A rebel ion cannon, heavy and huge and deadly and half buried in the ice of Hoth, sends two red blasts up into space, straight over the transport's bow. The blast roared past the rebel ship and continues straight for the destroyer. The Star Destroyer that has lowered its shields. The ion blasts smash into the Star Destroyer's central tower. A tiny lightning storm erupts in the destroyer's electronic epicenter, which sends shockwaves out through the complex of wires that twine through the vessel like veins. The great ship pitches to one side. The mice, it turns out, had a gun. In the rebel command center on Hoth, a cheer erupts from every throat. The general sighs and warily eyes the princess. She is smiling at him. Reluctantly, he smiles back. The transport and two fighters speed by the lurching Imperial ship. Lesson Theta. When stuff starts blowing up. Stand on one foot. Or, if you can't do that right now, balance a book on your head. Ask someone nearby to silently, slowly, count to 30 for you. As you balance, try to focus on nothing but your breath. Not counting, not balancing, just your breath. In and out. In and out. Then, as your assistant is counting, have them clap or shout without warning. A few times. Can you stay balanced? Can you keep your mind still? A still mind is necessary for being one with the Force. Especially when stuff starts blowing up.
Chapter 9.
You and your rebel troops survey the icy field. What had once been empty, sunny, and cold as death now bristles with machines of war. Troop transports are unloading platoon after platoon of white-clad stormtroopers, the terrifying faceless pawns of the Empire. But these the rebels can handle. It is the Snowwalkers that worry you. They trudge along like motorized skyscrapers, or maybe more like steel elephants on stilts.